Hello, and thanks for tuning in to this episode of R&R's Ask the Expert. I'm your host, Valerie King, R&R's Editor-in-Chief, and I'm joined today by Michael Dakduke, President and CEO of the Institute of Inspection, Cleaning, and Restoration Certification, commonly known as the IICRC. And if you didn't know already, it is a nonprofit organization for the inspection, cleaning, and restoration industries that since starting in 1972 has evolved into a global organization with more than 49,000 active certified technicians and more than 6,500 certified firms around the world. Michael joined the IICRC nearly 2 years ago now, and we're embarking on a new calendar year, so we thought we should invite him on for a touch base just to chat about what's new and notable with the IICRC. Thank you so much for joining me, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Valerie. Appreciate being here.
Pleasure to have you. All right, first, let's set the stage. For those who aren't familiar, could you talk about what the IICRC is and how it serves the restoration industry?
Yeah, our mission is primarily focused on two keywords, and I always tell people to remember those two keywords, certification and standards. That's what we focus on exclusively. We advance globally industry certifications across the three verticals that you mentioned, cleaning, restoration, and inspection. And we also advanced accredited industry standards. And we're particularly proud of being accredited by the American National Standards Institute as a standards developing organization.
Very good. Now, can you clarify your role with the IICRC and what your focus areas are?
You currently have me serving as the president and CEO. So I always tell people that oftentimes, this is a role where you've got to put all the pieces to the puzzle together, work with many of the different stakeholders involved to advance a common mission and vision. So it's a pretty heavy mission to focus on certifications and standards all by itself, if you were to just do that in North America alone. But to do that globally, having certified technicians in 40 countries, that's a lot to shoulder. And it's a lot of work for an organization. So even though we're a multi-million dollar nonprofit, taking on a global mission, you can become resource constrained very quickly. So my role is to figure out how to allocate our resources in the best way possible to get the maximum impact for our mission of advancing certifications and standards.
Great. Okay, grounded in the mission, grounded in the focus areas. Now I'm interested in some reflection on 2021. So looking back, I guess, what would you say the key challenges the organization faced were?
Well, I know a lot in our industry faced the issues with the pandemic, and I feel like we're in several phases of a post-pandemic, maybe the early phases of that. Maybe getting out of the early phases, because I think the early phase is trying to figure out vaccination, mass distribution, and then government reopenings, which we've seen. But there's a bit of stepping back at times with the variant that we're seeing. But that wasn't really our challenge. Our challenge was grounded in some of the basic challenges that any other company would face when you're trying to grow and scale. And for us, that was technology. We actually invested over half a million dollars in completely overhauling our database systems here in technology to work with the growth that we're experiencing, the 50,000 plus technicians, the over 6,000, I think we're on 7,000 certified firms. We added additional countries last year since we went online. The delivery of our education, so live stream, we're able to reach different populations overseas in sparse parts of the country, so like rural America. So that comes with us having to grow into new technology that can handle the kind of numbers that we're seeing. So it's exciting. It was intense. We're still dealing with some of the challenges of new technology, but we've just last year, or well, this year, I'm already ready for 2022, but this year we've implemented that new system. We're doing a few tweaks to it, and it's been great. We've had rave reviews, and we're excited about it. Our staff is excited, And we're excited about making some new improvements to it in 2022. I will say that the one thing that is visible in improvements to technology and embracing technology that the technicians will see, or maybe you'll see in the public at large, is digital badges. We are now issuing digital badges for our certified firms. We started with them. So usually you'll get a paper packet, a physical packet of your certificate. You can frame it and put it up on your wall. But we decided to then move to digital badges for our certified firms so they can post that on their websites and put it on social media. So we're excited about that. It's been embraced quite a bit by our certified firms and other key leaders in the organization.
Thanks for that. A very positive twist on challenges. You started with the challenge, but the majority of that response was what you're doing to embrace those really opportunities and using technology as a way to reach more people. Love the digital badge idea. That's cool. Yes, yes. Okay, so is there anything you'd like to add in terms of accomplishments you're most proud of? Because those could easily be named as accomplishments. Is there anything else in 2021 you'd like to highlight?
Yes. Customer service. And everybody talks about it. And I think the customer service prior to my arrival was on the upswing. There was some dark moments years ago that many in the industry remember. And I think it's important not to shy away from that or even to ignore it. We should be upfront. There were problems with customer service in the past. There were staffing issues. The organization was growing. We didn't have enough people interacting, answering phones, responding to emails in a timely manner. Well, technicians expect that. If you take an exam and you're looking for your certification and weeks or months go by, anybody would be upset. So one of the things that I focused on immediately upon being hired was measuring customer service, not one way, not two way, but three different ways. And one of the best results that anyone can see on our customer service is to Google IACRC. Just put it in the search engine of Google. And you know, on the right, like if you're going to a restaurant or something, you'll see Google reviews. We have nearly 1,000 reviews and we're holding a 5 out of 5 star rating. So those are real people that engage with us all the time. We've had over 15 to 20,000 live chat interactions on our website. That was another technology improvement that connects to customer service. So we implemented on our website a live chat function so that we can interact in real time with individuals. So we're not only talking on the phone, we're not only responding to emails, we're chatting with them. And it seems basic, but when you have to implement that and it's brand new and then measure it, you kind of get a little nervous. You're like, how are people going to respond? And to hold the 5 out of 5 rating, you can't fake that. Those are real interactions and those are real reviews. And I always encourage people to read those reviews. It's pretty much my morning reading. I go in and I look at the reviews and I say, what are we doing? And I'm like, oh, we got a 4-star, but we're holding 5 out of 5. And that's hard to do. Like our goal was 4.5 out of 5 and we're holding 5 out of 5. So I'm really proud of our customer service team.
That's impressive. Very impressive. So I'm curious about your collaboration with the Restoration Industry Association. It's something that's been happening for a while now. It's not new, but just wanted to follow up on that. And if you could elaborate on really why that's a thing and what's happening or what's to be expected looking ahead.
I think it's natural that we partner with the other major player in the restoration industry, and that's RIA, the Restoration Industry Association. And Mark, who's their current president, Katie, and the leadership over there, we have a wonderful relationship. There's no other way to put it. Every time we're working on projects related to the restoration industry, going back to the COVID white paper that we put out, us being at the RIA convention and even having time to speak. And we always have sit downs. We figure out ways to collaborate on new initiatives and projects. In fact, we're working on a joint task force right now on defining career pathways for the industry. So connecting certifications to a career ladder, so to speak. we feel like we have to be working hand in hand on projects moving forward. And I'm just so proud that we are maintaining such a great relationship with them. And I think that it's going to be, it's going to lead to more initiatives and projects that best serve the industry as a whole. So we're excited about that. It started several years ago with a, I believe it was a memorandum of understanding, an MOU that was signed, working on various projects together. And so one of the near term things that I see happening, maybe more mid-range targets that's going to happen, is the fire standard. So we're working on that standard, and I know RA is involved there as well. So we're excited about working together on many initiatives related to the restoration industry moving forward.
Thank you for that. It's neat to hear the different dimensions, of collaboration from, that high level overview of the industry, getting people involved and seeing their potential trajectory to something like a fire standard on that technical end. All right. So continuing to look ahead at 2022, what are your top objectives for the IICRC?
Well, every year we go through a strategic plan. I've been involved in the development of 1, 3, 5 year strategies. I'm a big believer in 1 year strategies now, because I think the environment changes so quickly. Generally, your vision and mission give you enough of a long-term kind of guidelines to follow that you'll find continuation in your year-to-year strategies, usually if you need to continue something. And we have 4 strategic priorities this year. 2 are a continuation from last year. And technically, we're concluding the first quarter of our current fiscal year. It starts in October. So we're not connected to the calendar year, our fiscal year. So January will be Q2 for us. So we're kind of already in FY 2022 for IICRC. The 2 things that we continued from last fiscal year to this fiscal year, is accreditation. And I mentioned earlier at the top of this conversation that our standards are accredited. Well, in our industry, we've never had accredited certifications. It's kind of interesting to think. And we have industry certifications, and that there are these prestigious accreditation bodies out there for certification. This touches on my background of working in post-secondary education and career technical and trade schools. Accreditation is very important sign of credibility, really, when you get that from a third party. So we are seeking in the next calendar year to be the first organization in this industry that has accredited standards and an accredited certification. And we're very, very proud to continue we started last year, last fiscal year, this calendar year, and we are going to continue it moving into January. So I hope this time next year, if we chat again, I can report to you and to everyone that we have an accredited certification. So that'll be exciting. The second thing is technology, which I already mentioned. And then we have 2 new priorities that we're working on. And that is advocacy in the form of government relations primarily, which I have a pretty robust background in, being in Washington, D.C. I did a lot of government relations and lobbying and public relations. And then the 4th is research, which we know you all do research at R&R as well, with your state of kind of the industry and pulling information. I think that there's more research that can be done in the restoration industry. And we're excited about working on advocacy and research to advance IICRC's mission and to get on the radars of decision makers exactly what we do. Because the problem is I think oftentimes we talk in a vacuum, and the public at large really doesn't know much about the restoration industry. It's sort of an unknown. And in many ways, it's folded under the tent of construction. Like it's sort of linked to that. And everything I've researched on it, you can't find breakouts of the restoration industry. For example, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics in the United States tracks projections for jobs. Well, there's nothing on the restoration industry. There's construction, and then there's a whole list of other occupations that are tracked, like 10-year projections. Are they going to grow? Is it going to shrink in the next 10 years? We don't even know for our industry. So there's a lot of question marks, which means there's a lot of opportunities as well. So those are our four strategic priorities: accreditation, technology, advocacy, and research.
Wow, very meaningful targets. Thanks for sharing those. I'm excited for the industry to hear this and watch this. I feel like the theme is just like rooted in objectivity. It's like you're finding research out, you're gaining credibility. There's less room for error and less room for unnecessary subjectivity, maybe. So I'm excited to see it all come to life and follow and share as it goes. Oh, I love that you said that.
I love that you said that. And I'm probably going to lift that from what you just said. And that objectivity, that's exactly what we're going for. We want other groups, other organizations to recognize us and recognize the value that we bring. And that means that we're going to have to be more transparent, and we're going to have to be more open and show what we're doing and be proud of it, but also always be improving. And I think we're really excited about that quality of improvement and kind of the stamps of approval that come with it.
Very good. Okay, you talked a little bit about standards earlier, alluding to FIRE. I'd like to double down on the topic. Are there any new standards that you can elaborate on that are being worked on right now, or standard revisions in the works?
There's always standards being worked on as a standards developing organization, but I do want to speak to one thing in particular that's happening that we're really excited about that not only touches standards, but also touches our international certified technicians and certified firms. And sometimes it's easy, especially being headquartered in the United States, to overlook what's happening overseas. And I've tried to emphasize the importance of our overseas customer base, essentially. And one of the things we're doing, and we recently kind of received the green light or approval on, and that was the counterpart to the American National Standards Institute, ANSI, which is who we're accredited by, is Standards Australia for Australia. We submitted the S500, which is on water damage restoration, and the S520 on mold remediation to Standards Australia for what's known as local modified adoption of standards. And so that's just a fancy way of them saying that they're willing to look at, if you apply, the adoption of a standard outside of Standards Australia. And we submitted that, had to be nearly a year ago now. And just recently we received approval to have local modified adoption. So they're just going to kind of make tweaks to it, but take the framework of it and mostly adopt it. But there are little things like when you go overseas, language changes. I mean, mold is MOULD there. It's MOLD here. So, but there are other changes that'll happen that are less subtle. And we're excited about doing that. When we initially filed our applications for local modified adoption for Standards Australia, we had 150 letters of support from Australians and folks in New Zealand. So that's kind of the next step for targeted growth overseas and doing things vastly different than we've done before, because we've never actually received recognition from an overseas body. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. All right. Okay. So trends, that's always a fun question to ask. So what top trends are you anticipating within the cleaning and the restoration industries looking ahead, especially as we're thinking about 2022?
I think one of the most fascinating things, and it's not just the restoration industry, I think it's everyone, and that's how we're going to embrace technology. And I think that just COVID amplified it, but I think it was coming no matter what. I mean, we know we're kind of in a technological revolution, so to speak, but there's so many advances that constantly happen. And it's a question of how quickly you can adopt and leverage it, the different types of technologies that exist. And I think the same will apply to the restoration industry. There are going to be changes that occur, and question for many companies is how quickly can they adapt to it and adopt it for that matter. So that's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. I think trends, and I know that we may talk about this a little later too, but you know, from my experience, there are challenges with skill shortage. Usually there's in a lot of different skilled labor, there's shortages of skills, and there's challenges in retention and hiring. I think this is where it's incumbent upon not only the companies that are out there that hire restoration companies, but also us as the Institute to start to look at that and start to do additional research, which I know is a priority of ours. And I just mentioned, because we need to know how bad is it? Like, how difficult is it for the hiring and challenges that exist? Because from my experience in the past, I think that is going to be a challenge moving forward. But is it one that's abnormal? Because in all of the trade industries, they experience the same thing. They all have that as a challenge. So I think that there's going to be some interesting trends there that some people might consider. A trend can also be a challenge too. Like, it'll be a challenge, but is it a normal trend that hiring is difficult? And then if you know that, then you can sort of address it. So technology, how that's embraced, hiring challenges. I think there's going to be some trends there moving forward. And I just think the way that the industry evolves moving forward, the last thing I'll say on it is, I do think, and this is why advocacy is a primary strategic priority of ours moving forward. I do think that this is an industry that is not highly regulated. And I think it's only a matter of time for an industry like ours to be regulated. Heads of government will take notice when you're working on property damage, anything that impacts health, the health of the environment, the health of individuals. Usually, I won't even say usually, it's fair to say that the vast majority of the time, regulations follow. It's just a matter of time. And so I think it's better that we're ahead of it as opposed to being reactive when regulations come down. And that's something we're tracking already, mostly with mold remediation and mold assessments. There has been a lot of movement, not only in the United States with regulations and laws, but also overseas. So I think that's coming.
Wow, very thoughtful trends and challenges. Even your questioning of like, okay, staffing, workforce challenges, but let's make sure that we're truly analyzing those with a deep and also kind of a broad perspective. I like your take on, okay, well, what else is happening outside of restoration and how does it compare or contrast? So exciting times, but no shortage of challenges to tackle and trends to keep tabs on. Anything else while we're on the topic of looking ahead, you know, notable initiatives, anything else in the works that we haven't touched on yet?
I think we that was pretty thorough. So
I can agree.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's more, but this won't be our first or last conversation. So yeah, absolutely. We're excited about the strategic plan moving forward into 2022.
Awesome. I'd love to dive deeper into your background, Michael, just because you talked a little bit about it, but it's a unique, I think, a valuable perspective and set of experiences before you joined the IICRC. So could you share a bit about your path to the IICRC and what exactly you were up to before?
Certainly. So prior to being hired on about 2 years ago, I was running a trade association out of Washington, D.C. that primarily worked on government relations and advocacy related to career, technical, and trade education. And that encompasses HVAC technicians, welders, but also any other sort of profession that connects or education that connects directly to a profession. So probably less liberal arts, or definitely less liberal arts and more like nursing, cybersecurity. So not only vocational or skilled trades, but also some of the other skilled professions and the education that is required before you get into a profession like that. I also sit on the board of a nursing school, and I've worked a lot on veterans policy. So any sort of policies, mostly education and economic policy related to military veterans transitioning. So I've worked a lot on most notably the post 9/11 GI Bill, which is probably over $70 billion has been allocated to that. And well over a million military veterans have taken advantage of that program, which is akin to a full ride scholarship. And so I worked quite deeply on that program and very passionate about veterans issues. I'd served in the military back in the Marine Corps in 2004-08, where I deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan before transitioning out and working on veterans policy and then post-secondary education, career technical and trade policy, and then economic impact stuff related to veterans, but also adult learners and adult students. So that's how my connection to the IICRC comes into play. A lot of post-secondary education work, but then I also got fascinated in kind of skills-based learning and the like a sub-bachelor degree level education and the value of those credentials, which I think gets overlooked quite a bit. And I'm very passionate about it because I was enlisted in the military, and enlisted is sort of separate than officer. Usually, not always, but usually enlisted individuals in the military didn't go to college, and they're kind of in trade-based professions. So I sort of had a connection very early on to it, and then I just built on it. And here I am now. I hope that's a pretty good recap.
Yes, very, very useful and good to know. I think a lot of parallels and a lot of interesting outside perspective, which brings me to the question, now that you're an insider, so to speak, what, with all of that experience and having been about 2 years in now, what's your take on the restoration industry? Any key traits that come to mind, or even non-traits?
Well, I guess it's interesting. Traits. I mean, there's a lot of similarities to other trade fields that I've worked in. I do think we're, even though it's been around a while, it's still very early on kind of in the maturation process, I think. I think that the fact that there's not very many regulations on it or laws associated with it. In fact, some of the things I looked at state by state is like there's guidance documents, and they'll say, okay, we recommend that you look at these industry groups like RIA and IICRC. So it stops short of regulating the industry. So it's kind of that tells me we're still in the early stages of where an industry will be, because the larger an industry becomes, it's inevitable that there's more focus on it. So I think that that's interesting. So that means we're kind of on the cusp of something, which is exciting, and we can shape it. So that's unique, because usually in many of the places I worked before, it's you're sort of at the in the life cycle. You're already in the phase where everything's been developed, so to speak, and you're trying to make tweaks or influence changes on what's already been created. So this is unique. It's almost clean slate. With that, the other fascinating thing is even though it's growing, it's still kind of a small world. Like a lot of people know each other. There's a lot of history, a rich history, their traditions. The key players, many of them are still around, and they remember some of the founding leaders that were involved. So that's really kind of fascinating to me, that it's sort of on this, almost like a growth, it's in a growth mode, and yet it still has, it's still early on, and it has this rich history. So it's fun to be a part of, and I'm sort of the new kid on the block with you. So this is kind of, it's great. It's really exciting to be a part of it. And I look forward to see what's going to happen in the future, because there's a lot to work on. There really is.
I appreciate that. It's neat to gain your perspective based on your past experiences working in industries, especially from a regulation standpoint, that were farther down the line. And get that helping you frame this and see this as like a moment of opportunity. I like that phrase, shaping, you know, opportunity to shape the industry. Very cool. All right. So of course I'm going to ask how our audience of restoration and remediation pros can get involved and connect with the IICRC. First part of that question, I guess what notable resources would you say that restoration professionals can leverage to advance themselves without going down the list of millions and millions of bullet points, which I realize are actually available?
Well, it's simple. It's standards. You have to. I mean, if anything, it's one of the challenges that I also see moving forward is there are standards that we have and that we will continue to produce moving forward. And it is the responsibility of technicians to embrace them and to be a part of shaping them, for that matter. I mean, these can be influenced by the public. There's a public comment period associated with it. Individuals can volunteer. So it's important for us as an industry to shape them and then also to utilize them in the field. Really important. So I think that's really key moving forward. So I think I always emphasize the standards. Although I will say that we have a responsibility to improve accessibility to our standards. And I mentioned earlier on technological improvements and the investment of over $500,000 in reshaping our systems. One of them that we're still working on is our standard subscription web store and website. So we are about to pretty much fix that. And we've heard that there are challenges with it. We agree. We're going to fix it now so that it can be easier to access the standards, share information, highlight information. If you have a digital standard for that matter, or if you purchase a physical copy of one. But I think that one's really important, especially moving forward. And that's something that we're going to use with advocacy too. We're going to advance the industry standards and we want to hold up how our industry is using them and embracing them. So that's number one. Of course, there's IICRC.org, and we have a series of white papers and information that individuals can constantly look at. Of course, R&R does a fabulous job of always capturing the information that we put out. So they can also go to you and they'll see exactly what we have.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for highlighting that. Yes, we're always happy to partner and share the important opportunities and resources and developments and announcements that IICRC has to share with the world. Speaking of sharing, kind of from the opposite end, what can restorers do, or how can they, what steps can they take? What are the opportunities if they want to help the IICRC in its mission? What can they do to get involved and give back?
No shortage of committees to volunteer on. Like any other organization, we are a nonprofit and we really encourage all of our stakeholders, our leaders, our certified technicians, the firm owners and managers and employees to get involved by volunteering in committees, meeting us at trade shows, finding out how you can get involved in one of our various committees, whether it be the development of exams. We have technical advisory committees, exam revision groups. We have, of course, numerous consensus bodies that fall under the standards committee. So there's no shortage of ways to be involved. It's more about how involved our leaders want to be. I find that, and this is happens in pretty much all industries, the more you start to climb the ladder and be involved in a specific profession, you want to give back, you want to volunteer, you want to advance your profession in the industry at large. And so one of the things that I will touch on is that this sometimes in nonprofits, you have a challenge of volunteerism. We don't have that problem. We have so many subject matter experts and individuals that do want to get involved and give back. So I think that's exciting for me that we have that. Because I've been a part of organizations where it's difficult and you have to wrangle folks and get them involved. And we don't have that here.
Great highlight. That's such a great, yeah, that really does speak to the passion. I even personally as new editor of R&R, I guess I gleaned that and grasped it right away. Like, wow, this seems to be a passionate industry. And over again, that seems to ring true. So as amazing as it is, now that I'm 6 months in, I'm not surprised to hear that volunteering is not a challenge of the organization. So that's great. All right. I'd like to, before we leave, revisit that topic of staffing you alluded to earlier, yes, which our research shows is absolutely the top challenge in the restoration industry right now. Has been for a while, but it's exacerbated, you know, likely due to the pandemic and some of those developments. But based on that experience before joining the restoration and cleaning industry through IICRC you talked about, I'm curious your take on this big, big challenge area that restoration companies face. Given that experience with career education organizations, like, do you have any thoughts or ideas on what contractors and business owners in our space could do or should think about doing to, as it goes, attract, retain, advance talent?
It's a tough one. And it's tough to answer because I think about the construction industry, some of the various other industries we've been a part of, and even sometimes on the periphery, but they sort of say the same things. Like our challenge, here's what's interesting. Part of it is figuring out, you mentioned to me in an exchange that this was the result of one of the top challenges was the result of a study in, I believe it's the State of the Industry report. Is that correct?
Yep, yeah. That is correct.
But if you go back even pre-COVID, I think it's still a top challenge. So you can look at it and go, okay, so is COVID a factor? Well, it might be, but it's clearly not the largest factor because this was happening pre-COVID. So then I think about trends across other trade-related industries. And this is one of the top challenges that come up. And it's tough. And it's tough because you're trying to convince individuals, especially now, by the way, as there's this movement for remote work and all that conversation around that, flexibility for employees, you're asking for a new generation to embrace hands-on work in a time when there are alternatives out there that are less hands-on. And probably, and this goes to my cybersecurity and other professional education, that don't require hands-on work and is sub-bachelor degree level. That is difficult, but it's not insurmountable. And that's why it's going, I think part of it is companies are going to have to get very creative about incentives, benefits, and opportunities that are provided to professionals. Because the other challenge is not only retiring folks, you have that on the back end. On the entry level, the retention side is difficult. Convincing someone to stay, not take something that might be equal or higher paying and less labor intensive. That's a challenge. And I think it's important not to dance around that stuff and shy away from having the conversation. You have to have a conversation about the external threats that exist, how industries are changing, how different opportunities exist for individuals that don't have degrees. So you kind of look at all of that and then you go, okay, so how can you sweeten the deal for individuals that start? How do you give them a ladder to climb, increased opportunities, great benefits, work-life balance? These are all challenges. Even think about that, work-life balance and restoration. You're on call at a moment's notice. I mean, if someone's house is flooded and you've got to respond to something late night or what about during the holidays right now or we're in the holiday season? That is difficult. So one of the things I look at is, okay, a recognition of whether there's a trend in retention and how far off your company is from that industry average. That's important because you might think that it's a, a greater challenge than it actually is. That would happen in other trade groups or trade fields I worked on. Some of them would kind of get super excited and go, oh my gosh, I mean, we're not retaining enough. This is bad. So what's the industry average? It might actually be okay. It feels like it's worse than it actually is, but there are more companies worse off than you right now. So now how do you address this issue, understanding that you are not actually as bad as you think you are? It's still a challenge, but maybe that's the industry average or trend. And it's like retail, you turn over retail. Construction's a big one. That's one we talk about a lot, but government actually is the best at industry retention, but they have a ton of benefits associated with it. Great retirement. So I used to compare that a lot in the previous work I did, because that challenge would constantly come up. So I'm not surprised that it came up in your study. And I'm going to venture to guess that it will continue to come up. So creative thinking around that. Now, the last thing I'll say is, because I hate to preach to the companies and tell them what they should do, even though I talked about some basic things of benefits and creating more opportunities, and it's fairly vague, I think there's a responsibility on us. The two of us, you, Valerie, me, Mike. I mean, I think in our roles, continuing the research that you're doing, the state of the industry reports, and maybe trying to dive a little deeper into asking questions behind the initial question that was asked, like, what is that challenge? And then finding out, well, how widespread is that challenge really? And is there consistency across the state of the industry reports? Like, there's the pre-COVID reports that you guys have done. Was that always top of list? There's the post-COVID reports. Was it top of list? Okay, so now we see that there is this trend. And then we're going to have to figure out what the industry average is. And that's kind of the deeper research that's not done yet. We don't know. I don't think we do if we know what the industry retention average is. We know for other industries, like construction and whatnot, like it's tracked by professionals that do economic research. But I don't think restoration is tracked at all. So we may need to start doing that ourselves, looking into that. Clearly, we're going to address some of this. Let me just say one more thing. I mentioned research as one of our four priorities. We're defining a research agenda to see where we start. And we thought pretty deeply about maybe exploring job demand in the industry. And I think eventually retention and things like that, because I think companies and certified firms and the industry at large would be interested in knowing, like, what are the job trend demands for restoration professionals? Is it on the incline? Is it flat? Is it declining? Is it different based on the region of the United States or world that you're in? Because that's the kind of research that helps out companies when they make business decisions, or if they're about to make it a market expansion, like if you're going to franchise out, open up a new satellite office or whatever it may be. And so I think we need to start doing more research to inform the industry. So not clear enough to provide, but I hope that I sort of tried to address some of the that question that you asked.
No, I appreciate that. And the critical thinking and diving, your appreciation and interest in diving deeper into the existing questions and challenges, questioning the questions or the assumptions, and not necessarily, and even beyond that, okay, great, that's a thing. What's next to better understand it? I think there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of room for creativity, to your point. So that was a very helpful answer, and I'm sure our audience will find their heads churning as mine did. Is there anything else before we sign off that you wanted to highlight? This has been great.
I am very appreciative of the opportunity to be here, but also what I consider a partnership with R&R. And I think it's wonderful to have you, refreshing to have you, a new perspective. I'm a believer in having new individuals come in from different walks of life, just so they can kind of apply their experiences, but also maybe help shape the thinking and bring new ideas that others may not have thought of. So I'm very excited to have you here at R&R as their editor. And I look forward to working with you moving forward. Thank you for your time.
Much. Thank you very much, Michael. It's been great. I feel like that's just been the overarching theme, is like outside in or anywho. All right. Well, one last question. I lied. Sure. Before we go, where can listeners go to connect with you or learn more about the IICRC?
It's IICRC.org. And you can go right to our website, connect with us. And in fact, I'd encourage your listeners to use the live chat function. Test it out for yourself. I think we're under 60 seconds response time. So you can go on and say, hey, I just saw on R&R that Valerie spoke with Mike and whatever. I mean, we love to engage with our people. And I think that it's exciting that we have that function up there. And it's proven that we've been successful. I mentioned we measured it three ways. I told you Google Chat, but just so you know,
yes,
we have an over 92% live chat satisfaction rating when people interact with us. So go on.
You all in these stats.
Well, I love it. So I get excited about that one.
I really, really do feel your passion and interest in keeping track of your ability at IICRC to serve the customer.
Yes.
And your enthusiasm. That's awesome.
Thank you again, Valerie. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. This has been great. I've learned a lot. And I feel like I've just spoken to an economist. I know you do have background in working with economics, but it's just been so insightful. So thanks. And listeners and viewers, for more insights on restoration, remediation, and the people behind it all, visit our website, rmagonline.com, Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you haven't yet, please be sure to follow the podcast, and that's how you'll keep up with all of our latest episodes as they come out and you'll be alerted. Also, if you could give us a quick review and rating, we'd so appreciate it. We are also on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, so we invite you to follow us there too. This has been R&R's Ask the Expert. Thanks for listening.